I hadn't spoken to Whitley Lansing, or any of them, in over a year. When her text arrived after my last final, it felt inevitable, like a comet tearing through the night sky, hinting of fate. Too long. WTF. Hashtag not cool. Sorry, my Tourette's again. How was your freshman year? Amazing? Awful? Seriously, we miss you. Breaking the silence because the gang is heading to Wincroft for my B-Day. The Linda will be in Mallorca and ESS Bert is getting married in St. Bart's for the third time, vegan yogi. So it's ours for the weekend, like yesteryear. Can you come? What do you say, Bumblebee? Carpe noctem. Seize the night. She was the only girl I knew who surveyed everybody like a leather-clad Dior model and rattled off Latin like it was her native language. How was your exam? My mom asked when she picked me up. I confused Socrates with Plato and ran out of time during the essay, I said, pulling on my seatbelt. I'm sure you did great. She smiled, a careful look. Anything else we need to do? I shook my head. My dad and I had already cleared out my dorm room. I'd returned my textbooks to the student union to get the 30% off for next year. My roommate had been a girl from New Haven named Casey who'd gone home to see her boyfriend every weekend. I'd barely seen her since orientation. The end of my freshman year at Emerson College had just come and gone with the indifferent silence usually reserved for a going-out-of-business sale at a mini-mall. Something dark's a-brewing, Jim would have told me. I had no plans all summer except to work alongside my parents at the Captain's Crow. The Captain's Crow, the Crow, it's called by locals, is the seaside cafe and ice cream parlor my family owns in Watch Hill, Rhode Island, the tiny coastal village where I grew up. Watch Hill, Rhode Island. Population? You know everyone. My great-grandfather, Byrne Hartley, opened the parlor in 1885, when Watch Hill was little more than a craggy hamlet where whaling captains came to shake off their sea legs and hold their children for the first time before taking off again for the Atlantic's great unknowns. Byrne's framed pencil portrait hangs over the entrance, revealing him to have the mad glare of some dead genius writer or a world explorer who never came home from the Arctic. The truth is, though, he could barely read, preferred familiar faces to strange ones and dry land to the sea. All he ever did was run our little dockside restaurant his whole life and perfect the recipe for the best clam chowder in the world. All summer, I scooped ice cream for tan teenagers in flip-flops and pastel sweaters. They came and went in big, skittish groups like schools of fish. I made cheeseburgers and tuna melts, coleslaw and milkshakes. I swept away sand, dusting the black and white checkered floor. I threw out napkins, ketchup packets, salt packets, over 21 wristbands, Dell's frozen lemonade cups, deep-sea fishing party boat brochures. I put lost cell phones beside the register so they could be easily found when the panic-stricken owners came barging inside. I lost my... Oh, thank you, you're the best! I cleaned up the torn blue tickets from the 1893 saltwater carousel located just a few doors down by the beach, which featured faded, faceless mermaids to ride, not horses. Watch Hill's greatest claim to fame was that Eleanor Roosevelt had been photographed riding a redhead with a turquoise tail side saddle. It was a town joke how put out she looked in the shot, how uncomfortable and buried alive under her plate tectonic layers of ruffled skirt. I cleaned the barbecue sauce off the garbage cans, the melted wreck rummage off the tables. Wreck rummage was every kid's favorite ice cream flavor, a mashup of cookie dough, walnuts, cake batter, and dark chocolate nuggets. I Cloroxed and Fantasticked and Mr. Cleaned the windows and counters and doorknobs. I dusted the brine off the mussels and the clams, polishing every one like a gemstone dealer obsessively inspecting emeralds. Most days I rose at 5 and went with my dad to pick out the day's seafood when the fishing boats came in, inspecting crab legs and fluke, oysters and bass, running my hands over their tapping legs and claws, barnacles and iridescent bellies. I composed song lyrics for a soundtrack to a made-up movie called Lola Anderson's Highway Robbery, drawing words, rhymes, faces, and hands on napkins and takeout menus, tossing them in the trash before anyone saw them. I attended grief support group for adolescents at the North Stonington Community Center. There was only one other kid in attendance, a silent boy named Turks, whose dad had died from ALS. After two meetings, he never returned, leaving me alone with the counselor, a jittery woman named Deb, who wore pantsuits and wielded a 3-inch thick book called Grief Management for Young People.